Good morning, everyone. I'm Mriganko, and you see I'm a postdoc from Iowa State University. But today's presentation would be the work that I did during my first postdoc when I was at University of Idaho. So the title of my presentation is Impact of Repeated Dairy Manure Applications on Nitrogen Mineralization Potential in Southern Idaho Calcareous Soils. So let me give you some backgrounds, like what are the major sources of nitrogen in the farm, right? So four major sources are soil organic matter, and then the organic fertilizers that composed of like animal manure or the green manure or the compost, and then the legumes which can biologically fix the nitrogen, and also the inorganic fertilizer N. But in this topic or my presentation, I'm going to discuss mostly on dairy manure because that's my title, right? So I'm more focused on dairy manure. So first, let's look at what are the benefits of dairy manure application. So it can add a lot of organic matter to the soil. It can increase the plant nutrient contents. It improves the soil water retention because the organic manure contains a lot of carbon and it adds all this organic matter. So there is a high chance that it will improve the soil water retention. Also, it will improve the soil structure. It can buffer the soil temperature from extreme highs and lows. It can increase the acidity in alkaline soils, and also it can reduce the acidity sometimes. It reduces the need for fertilizers, so it'll be more like organic way, and then it can increase the crop yield in comparison to crops receiving the ordinary fertilizer. However, though we have all these benefits, we need to look for that when we apply this organic manure, there can be some excessive salt accumulations. Also, we have this organic manure where we have this feces or the urine coming from these dairies. So that means there is high chance there will be some ammonia burn on plants. So you need to look for those things. Also high chance of nitrate leaching as well as phosphate leaching. And though I said that it can boost the crop yield, but it's not always true. So you need to look for those stuff. So in Idaho, there are like a lot of milking cows. Like as you see the numbers, the 474,000 of milking cows are present in 6 counties in southern Idaho. Whereas we have the cropland around 42,000 hectares of cropland. And in 2016, Idaho produced almost 14 million megagram of manure. So that's a huge amount of manure, right? So if we can overlap between this crop production and the dairy industry, so then it can create a great opportunity for the growers to use this dairy manure as a rich source of plant nutrients, and especially the nitrogen, because that will be my topic. So I'll be more focusing on that nitrogen again. So let's think about that. Okay, my topic is that repeated dairy manure application. So what does that mean? So through this flow diagram, that fate of dairy manure nitrogen, you see that the total manure nitrogen comes from two major sources. One is the urine and the other one is the feces. So urine contains mostly the ammoniacal nitrogen, which is the first nitrogen, which is it can easily get converted into the inorganic forms, which is the nitrate, right? Whereas the feces, it has the organic nitrogen, which is the slow nitrogen. And it has two components. One is the mineralized slowly during the year of the application, or the residual, which is going or the carryover to the following year. And which is also very slowly during the future years going. And then finally, the available nitrogen, what will be the ammonium nitrogen from the present application, okay, and then the mineralized organic form from the present and the residual part from the previous year. So there are three things which is coming from the following year. So there's a carryover. That's why we are applying this repeated dairy manure so that we have this carryover of this nitrogen that can go to the future years. So based on that, we created a study. It's an 8-year long study to evaluate the impacts of repeated dairy manure applications on nitrogen dynamics. And I have the specific objective that I would like to evaluate how the soil mineralizable nitrogen changes over time on a calcareous silt slope soil after receiving repeated dairy manure applications. So what we did lab-based incubation study and field-based incubation study. But in my talk, I'll be mostly focused on lab-based incubation study. So my specific objective was to evaluate how the pre-plant soil measurements, such as total nitrogen, organic matter, Olsen P, and Olsen K, at a depth of 0 to 30 centimeter, how they correlate with the net nitrogen mineralization. So my study site was USDA ARS Research Farm at Kimberley, Idaho. And you can see that in the map we have the Idaho map, and that's my site. So my experimental design was randomized complete block design, and I had 8 treatments. And each treatment had 4 applications, so total 32 plots. And each plot was around 12 by 18 meter plots. And we have 4 cropping rotations. So each year, as you see, the first year when we started is 2013. That year it was barley. Followed by the next year, 2014, it was sugar beet. And then 15, wheat. And then 16, potato. So that 2016 year when I joined as a postdoc at University of Idaho. So the previous years, I didn't collect the samples. So my co-workers, they collected the samples, but I used those data, and I'm going to present that. But 2016, I also collected some data, which I'm going to present and correlate with my objectives, okay? So here are my 8 treatments. So the first one is the control, where no nutrients were applied, followed by the fertilizer only, and then I have 6 fall applied manure treatments. So when I'm saying fall applied, that means they were applied in the month of November and December. It's October, November. So based on the crop, which crop, when is the harvest time. So based on that, we applied the manure treatments. And out of those manure treatments, we had 3 rates. So one is the 17.3 megagram per hectare, 34.8, and 52 megagram per hectare. And they're all dry weight basis, okay? So for my simplification, I know there's a lot of information. So when I'll be explaining my data, just consider like low, medium, and the high, okay? And then I have 2 application frequencies. One is the annual, one is the biannual. So annual means applied every year, and biannual is every other year. So first look at that, what is my annual and cumulative loading rates of dairy manure applied? So as I said, I have these 8 treatments, okay? And then in each year, if you see that 17.3 biannual, if I start with that, so 17.3 biannual 2012, it's 17.3, 2013, it's 0, so that means there is no application. But within bracket, the parentheses I have written like 17.3, so that means that's the cumulative. So whatever is written within the parentheses, that's the cumulative. So if I come to 2014, then it becomes 34.5 and so on. So similarly, if I go to the annual treatment, the first year it is 17.3, and at the same rate I have applied, or we have applied actually, in each year. And if you see the cumulative, that 2013 it is 34.5, plus again the following year, 2014, it is 51.8, and then 69, and so on. And that's how it is for all the treatments. So in the lab-based incubation study, what we did, that the pre-plant soils were collected from each plot in every spring, just before the planting. And we composited 10 subsamples per plot. And the soils were collected from 0 to 30 centimeter depth. And then those soil samples were analyzed for standard agronomic soil test panel for different Olsen P, Olsen K, and total nitrogen, total organic matter, and all these things. And then the subsample, around 500 gram soils that we took, and aerobically they were incubated at 23 degrees Celsius for 100 days at field moisture. And it was around 20 or 22% of gravimetric water content. And net mineralizable N was calculated based on inorganic nitrogen at day 100, subtracted inorganic nitrogen at day 0. So that's how we did. That's me. So we are collecting the soil sample, followed by our co-worker. She's working on the 2 millimeter sieving the soil samples. Then you put those 500 soil samples in a Ziploc bag. And if you see those Ziploc bags plus straw, so straw, the purpose of having that straw is because it's an aerobic incubation study. So there is some air exchange is going on, okay? And then all these samples go into an incubation chamber where you maintain the temperature. And then finally, when it is ready, I collect these samples and then extract the 2 molar KCl extraction for ammonium and nitrate. So the characteristics of the applied dairy manure. So the pH is usually, it remains like alkaline. It's very high, kind of 8.8 on an average. The moisture content, if you see all over the years, like 2012 to 2015, pretty much 50% of the moisture. Organic matter remained like around 55%. And then the total nitrogen was 1.9%. Out of that, maximum was organic nitrogen, which is around 1.6%. And the least amount was ammoniacal nitrogen, which is around 0.3%. Now this is my net mineralizable N. So my y-axis is my net mineralizable N, and x-axis is my different years, and I have also put the picture of those crops in each year so that you can relate that which year is which crop, okay? So here in this graph, if you see, if I start from the left, okay? So the red bar is my control bar, followed by the light green color, that's my fertilizer, and then the purple color and the two blue colors, they are actually my biannual applications, okay? And then the last three bar, they are my annual applications. So the low, medium, and the high. So if you see that 2013 versus 2014, there is a difference, right? Especially the biannual part, if you see, that means the purple and the two blue colors, they are actually decreasing in 2014 because that's biannual application. So the second year, we didn't apply any manure on those plots. And the similar thing happened in 2016 as compared to 2015, it decreased. So that, as I said, so no biannual application here. That's why you see, as compared to the previous year, the next year, there is less amount of the mineralizable N. Whereas if I compare all the annual, you will see from 2013 to 2016, all low, medium, and high range, they gradually increased. And that's what we expect, that okay, there is more amount of the organic nitrogen source we are providing, and over the time they get mineralized, and that's why you see all this net mineralizable N. Now, what we did, as I said, that the main objective for this presentation is pre-plant soil characteristics and how they relate to net mineralizable N. So this is what I did, that some correlation with my pre-plant soil characteristics and my net mineralizable N. So first thing is, if you see soil total nitrogen, we started, the correlation that I found, the R-square value is 0.39, and over the time it starts to improve. And the same thing if you see for soil organic matter or soil organic N or Olsen P and Olsen K, over the time, the first year it is kind of low and then starts to increase. Now, I saw like, okay, that's what happened year-wise. Like every year when I start to compare, that's kind of correlation we see. Now, I wanted to see, okay, let me get the pool data. What happened to that? So here is my pool data, net mineralizable N with pre-plant soil organic N. And now, earlier my total N was 32 because I had 8 treatment and 4 application 32 plots. Now for 4 years, 32 multiplied by 4, total N becomes like 122. And you see the correlation now becomes actually 0.7. So if I go to my next one, that pre-plant soil total nitrogen, it improved a little bit, 0.71, okay? And then now I go to the soil organic matter, it improved again a little bit more. It's now 0.73. The soil organic matter actually contains both organic N and also my total N. Then I had a comparison with Olsen P, and I see the correlation is pretty good. It's also 0.75. And the last one, that with Olsen K, I also found this correlation is 0.77. Which is exciting for me because I see that over the years it is increasing, though there is some kind of things in all these graphs that I showed you, this pool data, that there is a cluster a little bit, and it's not starting from the from 0, 0, it's a little bit on the top. So there is still something going on, you know. So we need to improve it. So that's where comes my conclusion that okay, in this kind of study, the time and temperature are critical for nitrogen mineralization prediction, especially in southern Idaho where we have cool and arid climate. However, we found some good correlation between potentially mineralizable nitrogen or net mineralizable nitrogen with pre-plant soil characteristics. But this study was carried out, you know, only one site in Idaho. And what we need to do, that we need to collect the soils from other regions with contrasting histories and also determine which state will be working best for PMN prediction beyond our field, if any. So that the correlation, what we saw, like, okay, 70%, it's not that okay, it will happen everywhere. It's just for Idaho, okay, and only for one site. So we need to validate these with different sites, with different regions, so that we can say that the better way we can predict our nitrogen mineralization. And also look at some other soil parameters, such as texture, soil carbon and nitrogen ratio, or climate or amendment, if there is any other amendment that we can check for. So with that, I would like to thank you, all my personnel who helped me. So I would like to acknowledge all these personnel, like from my field day to my lab day, everywhere they helped me, otherwise this study wouldn't be possible. And especially the funding agencies, because without money nothing is possible, right? All the brain, whatever we twist, it doesn't happen without money. So they're a great resource, they helped us, provided us money. And with this, I would like to thank you everyone. Thanks for coming and listening to me. And if you have any question, Sorry, say again.
South Florida also has calcareous soils.
Yes.
Do you think that this application, manually or biannually, would also improve?
Well, the Florida soil is more sandy type of soil, right? Ours was actually a silty loam type of soil. So two different type of texture.
Still
calcareous, but it's not the only factor that you can, I guess, consider. It may happen, but I'm not saying that it won't, okay? So my answer would be, yes, it can happen, but we need to check. That's why I said, like, okay, this is only for one site in Idaho, not even throughout the Idaho that we collected the soils from different sites, just one plot, okay? But yeah, you can go ahead and do that and see how the results are exciting or not. Yes? The thing is, you know, that's the thing we are still looking for. I know that's the thing I also looked at, that the control is also kind of increasing. But there could be so many different theories actually I can come up with, but we are still working on it. It's actually 4-year study, and it's a long-term 8-year study. And our other crew members, they will be sowing all these crops for following years. So we will see how it goes. But that's a good comment. Yes? Mm-hmm. That's good. Actually, you know, during the summertime, we also get a lot of temperature there in Idaho. So there could be some amount of the breakdown of this organic matter is going on. I mean, that's kind of my assumptions. Okay. Oh, this is R square.
Is it R square?
Yes. That's my title, R square. And this is the correlation. Yeah.
Okay, let's thank our speaker.